Good morning, good evening, wherever you are across the world and the universe. Welcome to my Quantum Living Podcast, at the intersection of science and spirituality. I'm your host, Anna Anderson, quantum coach and teacher, intuitive guide, and above all, an inquisitive soul. This podcast is about how we can bring the various spiritual, metaphysical, and esoteric concepts validated by quantum physics and modern cosmology to the very practical level to improve and enrich our life experience as individuals, communities, and the humankind. Whether you are listening to this show while driving or commuting, doing chores around the house, relaxing on a couch, or flying in a spaceship across the galaxy, I hope you'll enjoy today's episode. Okay, let's begin. Hello and welcome back to Quantum Living. Today's episode is a treat for everyone. Professional tarot card readers, those who read tarot for themselves, either openly or secretly, with a torch at night when no one is watching, and those who don't believe in divination and view tarot readings as a scam. There are many books and programs about tarot cards and readings, and you could say that this topic has by now been dissected to death. But I would like to look at tarot from my vantage point at the intersection of science and spirituality. I am very open-minded and very practical at the same time, and I like to understand how things work. I'd like to explore tarot as a bridge between the physical and other dimensions and find the answer to my burning question. Where does this information come from? Who or what is the source, excluding the reader, of course, and how does it work? I mean, really, is it the spirit, the Akashic records, our spirit guides, the other side, the aura? The source of tarot information is still a mystery. And being a very practical person, as I said, I will also ask my guest to give us few insider tips about how to read tarot. My special guest today is Julia Gordon Bramer. Julia is a professional tarot card reader, scholar, award-winning writer and poet, and former professor at the graduate writing program at Lindenwood University. She is the author of several books, including Fixed Stars Govern a Life, Decoding Sylvia Plath, and Tarot Life Lessons. You will find more about Julia in her guest bio on my podcast website at quantumlivingpodcast.com. Hello, Julia. Welcome to Quantum Living. It's such a pleasure to have you on my show.
Thank you so much, Anna. That was a lovely introduction.
Well, I always like to give some thought to the title of my episode, of my new episode, and to make it not only catchy, but also capturing the essence of the topic with a hint of mystery, if possible, to make it intriguing. And I also like it to come to me rather than having to construct it. I've had few ideas for the title of this episode bouncing around my head for a few days, but none felt right. So finally, last night, I asked my spirit guidance, please give me the best title. And it was given to me instantly, Decoding Tarot. Tarot as a divination tool is indeed quite complex and mysterious, so let's decode it as best we can. What we do know, what we don't know, and just speculate about the rest. So to begin with, what is tarot, and could you tell us how did you discover tarot and decide to learn and practice it?
Of course, yeah. So what is tarot? I say tarot, and it really doesn't matter how you pronounce it, just so long as you don't rhyme it with carrot. That's what when people say tarot. It's like, no. But you may hear me pronounce it slightly different, and I don't think the pronunciation matters a mm-hmm. terrible deal. Tarot is a 78 card deck. It is in alignment, just in the way of a deck of playing cards. It has four suits. But it's a little bit special because in addition to the 56 cards that we have in a playing card deck with the four suits and the court cards, we have something in the tarot called the Major Arcana. And the Major Arcana, they are the most famous of the tarot cards. They're the ones we see in the movies in Hollywood, the Death card and the Lovers and the Hermit, which is on a Led Zeppelin album. And, you know, they've infused our culture. The Major Arcana tarot cards represent those milestones in life. They are the things and the people that every culture has. So every culture has mothers, which would be represented by the Empress. Every culture has fathers and sometimes military figures, which is represented by the Emperor. Every culture has their society and their rules, which is the Hierophant. We all have lovers. We all have our warriors and our people driven to succeed, which is the Chariot. We have our elderly wise men, which is the Hermit. And this goes on. There are stages in the tarot. So the first nine cards in the tarot kind of represent those basic things that I just covered. In the second level of the Major Arcana, we get into the higher experiences of life. We get into the hard decisions of the Hanged Man, and we get into the big changes of the Death card, which is actually a transformation card. It rarely means actual death. People get so afraid of that one. We get into the material world and the temptations of the Devil card, and we get into tragedies of the Tower card. Everyone in their life has all of these. And we tend to go through the whole Major Arcana cycle at least a couple of times in the average lifespan, sometimes three or four times, depending on how rich your life is and how active you are. But think of the Major Arcana as those big milestones, babies being born and graduations and marriages and divorces and retirements, you know, those big events. And then the Minor Arcana is the more day-to-day events, the more mundane, maybe less thrilling, but still important on the macro level. The Minor Arcana, as I said, is in four suits. So we have wands, we have swords, we have pentacles, and we have cups. And these all co-align with the seasons, with the elements. They have their moods. So swords tend to be about action and decision-making, and wands tend to be more creative and emotional and enthusiastic, and cups are the love and the outpouring of emotion, and pentacles tend to be the things of the world, just in the same way that you could align pentacles with diamonds in a traditional deck. You could do cups with hearts in a traditional deck. You could do wands with clubs and swords with spades. And this is why some people can do readings from traditional decks. I've certainly done it. If tarot is a part of you and has been for a long time, it's easy to do readings that way. You can almost see the regular tarot card on the, you know, the four of spades or whatever, but it's not exactly in alignment. We have in the tarot deck, we have the court cards of the page, the knight, the queen, and the king. In a regular deck, we've got our jacks, which could kind of go for either a page or a knight, and then our queens and our kings. In correlation with the Fool card, which is a Major Arcana card, some people do use the Joker. The Joker is sort of the oddball wild card in the regular deck, and the Fool card in the tarot is a bit that way too, as number zero in the Major Arcana. So some people see the Fool card as a bridge between the Major and the Minor Arcana and not truly belonging to either. The Fool tends to represent like a baby being born and the beginning of life, the beginning of that life journey. It's a card of innocence and joy and fun.
Lovely.
Yeah. So that's what that is. You asked my story next.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So So I am 60 years old. I have been reading tarot for over 45 years. I first got my deck, my very first tarot deck, when I was 16. And I write about this in Tarot Life Lessons. I have a story for each of the major arcana tarot cards. And the first card, the Fool card, is my story. So story zero. So
Okay.
it is I discuss I wander into a mall on a hot summer day, and just to cool off, really. And I was 16 years old and had not a lot going on, nothing much to do. And I walked into a magic shop. And in the 1970s, what to date myself here, we didn't have the mystical new age shops that we have today. You know, they didn't have shops where you could buy crystals and pendulums and all sorts of spiritual guidebooks. This was actual magic tricks. And so this was, you know, rabbits and hats and magic wands and those sponge balls and flowers that you could shove up your sleeve. And and so in the midst of this and the gag gifts, I saw these tarot cards. And the way I tell the story in the book, a very worldly young woman of about 20 years old to my 16, she seemed to have all the wisdom of the universe to me. And she motioned and she said, "Do you want to see some real magic?" And she called me over,
Okay.
and she took them out from behind the plexiglass counter, and she just took them out of the box and showed them to me. And I was smitten. It was just the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And so I put down my babysitting money, and I took them home with me. And that was the beginning of a life journey. That was my fool card starting the journey. And it really just became such a part of my life. I talk about how I learned in my book, which was mainly from the little white booklet that comes free within the card, within the deck. And I think, you know, that was also the year that I started to have my first premonitions and was just becoming a little bit in tune with my own psychic senses. I think that little white booklet, in its brevity, with just a couple words to explain what each card was, I think that was very good for my intuition, because I wasn't overwhelmed with information and I got the general gist, and I really learned to go into my feelings about the card and what I saw within the card's design and what the card meant to me. And so for many, many years, I didn't have a tarot book, and I didn't study, you know, with these masters like Mary Greer and Rachel Pollack. You know, those books did show up on my bookshelves, but many, you know, maybe over a decade later. So most of my youth was just intuiting tarot. And as I got older, I did work with some other tarot card readers, and we shared experiences and tricks. And I learned that sometimes we deviate from what the books say and just go purely on instinct. And sometimes, like for me, I'm clairaudient, so I hear something, you know, and a voice may come to me to direct me on how to read a card. Or if I should reverse it, or something like that. And so I've just learned, as I've gotten older, to trust my inner voice, and trust, you know, the poet Allen Ginsberg. I'm also a poet. He said, first thought, best thought. And I always thought, you know, first thought, best thought is intuition. And we all know it. We've all had that. And poetry is so close to a mystical practice, which you mentioned. I'm a scholar of the poet Sylvia Plath, and my most recent book is called The Occult Sylvia Plath. I'll just mention that real quick, also with Destiny Books. But yeah, so it's been a journey. I am also a teacher and practitioner of A Course in Miracles. I'm in a Buddhist studies group. I read the Tao. I read the Bible. I have a Christian background. I grew up in the Episcopal Church, although I've learned as I grew older, it wasn't exactly a traditional kind of Episcopal church because they spoke in tongues and they taught us automatic writing when I was in school, and I would go to the church retreats. And so they were a little more out there, a little more spiritual. So it's been a journey for me. And I think the tarot has incorporated all of my spiritual systems and beliefs. As I got into studying the poet and writer Sylvia Plath, I tumbled into alchemy and Kabbalah, which I had never expected to fall into. And the tarot is infused with both of that. And really, you know, what I've learned is the Kabbalah is that great umbrella over all of the mystical sciences. And so tarot is structured. It fits on the Kabbalah Tree of Life. People can look that up easily online and see that there's a tarot card for every station and every path on the Kabbalah Tree of Life. So I've learned a lot about that. I'm not sure anyone ever becomes an expert on Kabbalah.
Yeah, it's a huge knowledge.
Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Now, tarot is both an art and a craft. It is much more than interpreting the cards and layouts, which is the craft part.
Yes.
The art is its mysterious connection with the information about the person we are doing the reading for, past, present, and future, that is somehow selecting and organizing the cards. I will come back to the timelines, but I'd like to start our conversation focused on tarot by addressing the elephant in the room, because no one really talks about it. How does it work? And I mean, really, exactly how come the right cards are being drawn and arranged in a spread, in the right order and position? What and how influences it?
Okay.
What is the influence? What is the source of this physical, if you like, influence? Because cards are physical, and you know, mm-hmm. the spread is a physical arrangement. And I think that this is the most important part of this process, because the interpretation of the cards is just the mechanics, and it largely depends on the reader. And there are books, there are courses, you can learn how to interpret cards and, right. and the meaning of each card. But without the psychic influence, as I call it, without some energy influence, tarot would be no more than a parlor game
right.
with some random juicy information coming up for amusement and entertainment, rather than providing a valid insight into our destiny. Could you please speak to this?
Yes. So I compare tarot cards to dream analysis. And by that, we're doing this reading together. I say we, me and the person I'm reading for, because you, of course, know your life. You know how to apply the things that I will say. I don't know that. So I'm coming in cold, and I like it best that way. I like it when I don't know the person I'm reading for, because then I don't want to have biases. I don't want to project my fears or my hopes for you, and I just want to see what I see. But as each tarot card is loaded with symbolism. So we've got, as I mentioned before, we've got things like the elements. We have numbers on the cards. We have mythology and mythological stories that are pictured on the cards. We have alchemy and alchemical symbols, and we have astrology and astronomy, and even history in some cases. And so all of this stuff is represented in these cards. When I read, you know, a client usually asks me a question, And either I shuffle for them or I may have them shuffle depending on whether we're in person or not. I do a lot of readings over video and by Zoom and the phone and even email. And so I get their question, and that helps me to know sort of how to frame it and how to lay the cards down. I have my different layouts to answer different questions. So if you were to say, tell me about my love life, I would probably do something like the horseshoe spread, which is seven cards. And kind of some people call that the pyramid spread. It's kind of triangular. You know, for a yes, no question, I might just do three cards. If somebody says, tell me about, you know, what somebody's thinking about me, I might do five cards, something like that. And it comes up, and I read from the symbols, I read in accordance of answering your question, and I will, you know, also, of course, take in any guidance I get, like from the clairaudient point of view, as a psychic. Now, you said, how do the right cards show up at the right time? That's the mystery, and that's spirit. I credit that entirely to Source. And before I start my reading, I usually say a little prayer or you know, meditate for a little bit. And I ask to be a channel for the highest good, to give you the information that you need to carry on, to grow and learn. Tarot is about growth. It's about personal growth and learning. And I do believe that if I show you something ahead that you don't like, it is an opportunity to do it differently. So I'm never going to tell you you're doomed. It is not carved in stone in the way that some practices say this will happen and that you have no escape. You know, you're not doomed. I believe I can read your cards because we're connected just by being alive. I call that life force God. I don't tell people how to do God or what to call God. That's your business. You know, you could say energy or source or goddess or whatever you like, Holy Spirit. You know, but I'm tapping into something, and just by being alive, we're sharing that energy, that spirit, and so I'm asking it to be a gift or a blessing to you to get the information you need. So that's how the cards end up on the table.
Okay, thank you. Most tarot readers would say to the client, I am reading your aura, or I'm accessing your Akashic records, or I am getting information from your spirit guides or my spirit guides. But what I'm hearing is that you are not that prescriptive.
Correct.
You just feel that you are receiving this information, mm-hmm. which, if you like, articulates into the physical cards that you are drawn to pick up, or somehow they are arranged in a spread. Mm-hmm. And then you obviously interpret the cards and using your own further insight. And I think I like that, because I like that approach, because not being so prescriptive, I feel is more authentic.
Right.
Because I don't think anyone can really ever know.
Yes. Yeah. So some people could say it's angels. Some people, Akashic records. Right. Like, you know, it's you do you. And I'm just bringing the message.
Lovely. You mentioned earlier, and you showed us a copy of your latest book, Tarot Life Lessons. I have to say that the title, Tarot Life Lessons, has intrigued me. Are you saying that tarot isn't just a mirror or download of the information about us contained in the quantum field, in the spirit, but also a teacher interpreting that information as lessons? Or is this part done by the reader?
It's mainly done by the reader here. So these are real life stories that I recorded for myself originally in my journals, because I just, you know, I read for somebody and it blew my mind and I didn't want to forget it. And I wanted to remember which cards I put down, and I wanted to just, you know, hold on to all the details because it fascinated me. Some of these stories are, you know, there's scam artists, there's gold diggers, there's a murder, there's children who have died and helping the parents, you know, out of, you know, through that. There are addictions, you know, there are a lot of interesting, very human stories. I think that was the main thing, that when I did put it together as a book, I wanted stories that will touch us all, that we all know these people if they're not us already. And we've all seen some of this, and we can find our way through it for some healing, perhaps, ideally. And not everybody chooses healing, and there's some of that in this book as well. But I wanted it to be a growth, an occasion for growth for everyone. So originally, I called the book, my working title was The Tarot Diaries and Inner Traditions, the parent company of Destiny Books that published this. They chose Tarot Life Lessons, and I like it. It's accurate because it is certainly that as well.
And it's intriguing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is intriguing. It is unusual. And it's intriguing, you know, which I picked up, hence my question.
Yeah, I wanted to write a tarot book that wasn't out already. I mean, there are so many books on how to read tarot, and a million of them, maybe even more. But I had never seen one like the one I wrote, which is real practical application. And somebody can, it's as if they're sitting with me and I'm telling them how I'm reading it and they're experiencing it with me. And you're going to see my insecurities, and you're going to see people challenging me, and you're going to see people frightening me in some cases. And it's all there as life as a professional tarot card reader. So I've had other tarot card readers tell me they really resonate with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've had people who have nothing to do with tarot who just really like the stories and were very moved and touched by it. So, you know, these were powerful stories. They weren't the day-to-day stuff. They were the ones that knocked my socks off.
Yes, thank you. And I will include a link to the book in the show notes so that people can look it up and purchase if they are interested.
Thank you.
I've had many tarot and psychic readings in my life. And what I found is that most readers can see the past and present. But looking into the future, and especially at the timing of the future events, is a whole new ballgame.
Yeah.
Why? What's the difference? What's the challenge here?
The future's changeable, you know? I consider when I give a reading, it's a heads up. And so if we see something coming up that you don't like, you can do that differently. To a point. I mean, you know, you can't control other people and what they do to you necessarily, but you can control how you're going to react to it, or you could maybe take precautions or that sort of thing. So the future is more malleable than the past and present. I think that we, you know, time is tricky and some are better than others at reading it. I tend to tell my clients that my view is about 3 years out, most comfortably 1 year. I think of it like looking a long distance, you know, and you can see a mile maybe, you know, and it's got to really squint. and so I don't go beyond a few years, and I ideally like to do 1 to 2 years out. I think we're comfortable with that. And my clients are too, because so when I'm doing the Celtic cross, we have that staff of cards that runs up the side. And some tarot card readers will say that those four cards are your entire life. I read it as the next 2 years, because I think that we can't grasp our entire lives. We have no vision that far, no inner vision. You know, we don't know what we're going to even want in 10 years. Things change a lot. And so I read it as the next 2 years. And so in that example, you know, there's a card for just how you're going to be, how you see yourself in that couple of years, what's going on in the environment around you, what your hopes and fears are, and what the outcome is, you know, and that's kind of that staff in the Celtic cross. But other people may read that differently. I have many people who say, you know, tell me how this business proposal is going to end up, or tell me when I'm going to get a job, or and so I can look at that. But tarot's a little tricky with time. And it's more like, it's less about this is going to happen on June 18th and more like this is going to happen after this, this, and this take place. So it's a story in cards. Sometimes I can get accurate dates. I have had people tell me I'm very accurate before. You know, that's just if spirit wants you to know exactly or not.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I've got a quirky thought.
Okay.
If tarot is a bridge between this and other dimensions, and it is a channel facilitating the flow of energy as information from the spirit to the quantum field, could this channel be used in reverse by sending out intention as information through this channel? Mm-hmm. Into the quantum field where it would hopefully manifest.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, when I do a quick reading for myself, I don't do readings for other people, but just for myself, which is just shuffling the deck until a card flies out of it, mm-hmm. which is most common, or I just pull out three cards, I will often, almost intuitively, pick. At the end of this reading, I would pick three cards I want to see, and they are usually the Sun, the World, and the Wheel of Fortune.
Everyone's favorite.
And what I do, I will put them together at the bottom of the deck and send their energy with my thoughts through tarot into the quantum field to manifest the outcome I want. What do you think? Tarot in reverse, what do you think?
Well, so here's what I think about that. I think it's possible if you are in alignment with love and light and the source, because the source is going to rule. You know, the source is bigger than any of us. And we may think that we know the right thing to happen or the right way that we should self-actualize. And we might be wrong about that. It might be on a different timetable that, you know, we're trying to force something. That's really something I learned around my publishing. I thought books were done long before they were ready to be published. And I tried and tried to make it happen. And it wasn't happening the way I wished it to. And, you know, and then when I sort of surrendered, Source lined it all up quite neatly. These last two books, I didn't even try to publish. It was like they came to me, and the best publisher I could have imagined, and they've treated me so well. So, you know, that this is how God works. And if you, you know, if you're talking about sending information into the quantum field, I would just say be careful not to think you know more than God. And you know, if it's all love and light and you're just saying, I want to reach my highest potential and I want to be a channel and a gift, and then certainly you can do that. If you're sending information, you know, for world peace, certainly let's all start doing that, right? That's a great idea. But for something more egotistically aligned, you know, a promotion or to be incredibly wealthy, or, you know, that might not be Source's idea for you. And now I do believe that we're all here to be examples of, you know, prosperity and abundance in our, you know, in our love and our light, and that we're not meant to suffer. No one is meant to suffer, but some of us have chosen paths that that bring us down that way. And so, you know, it's a complicated thing. Every individual and what they want and what they need and what's right for them is going to be different. I don't think one size fits all. I can't say that, my idea of self-actualization may be different from your idea. And I was just talking to a friend a couple of days ago, and we were talking about manifesting. And he said to me, you know, Julia, but a couple of weeks ago, I didn't have two pennies to rub together, and my bank account was at zero, and I thought I was going to have to live with my mother, and I was really worried about this. And now I've got this great gig that just manifested, where I'm going to be living over a summer camp and the handyman and taking care of everything and free room, free board. And he looked at that like a really high manifestation. I look at that like, oh my gosh, he doesn't have any security beyond, I would manifest higher than that. I want more than just room and board. Maybe I'm a little greedier, but my vision is bigger than that. We should all, hopefully manifest for our basic needs, and I do believe that we're meant to have that. We have different ideas for what self-actualization and manifesting even are. We're all so uniquely different, and what we want, he's a simpler lifestyle than I am. I'm on a plane every week doing a book tour right now. And I need to manifest my rental car and my food and my my hotels. And it's a lot.
Yes. But I still think that this idea, which is really like reverse engineering, if you like, of tarot as the information channel to reverse engineer to say, okay, if the information is coming this way, how about sending it the other way? I always like to think of some unusual ways to utilize things. Lovely. What is the relationship between tarot and astrology, numerology, and psychic skills?
Yeah. So they're all under, the Kabbalah, under the great umbrella of the Kabbalah, which is sort of a mystical blueprint of how the occult sciences work. They all kind of run on the same pathways, you might say. They have the same kind of architecture. I am not an astrologist. However, astrology is in the tarot. Each card has a corresponding, planet or star or constellation, and numerology. Each card has a number. And these are all to give us information to layer the meanings within the card to help the reader to come up with, the right answer. What else did you say was in? That you mentioned?
Numerology and psychic skills.
Yeah. So the psychic skills, that's an interesting point. Anyone can read tarot, whether they're highly psychic or not. I do have a story in Tarot Life Lessons of somebody who was at a party who was drunk and took my cards from me, and he said, "I'm going to read for you." And he put them down on the table. And he gave me a surprisingly good reading. And it was just riffing off the pictures. And my theory is that because he was drunk, he was open. He had no judgment. He really didn't care about being wrong. He was just going for it and what he saw. And so that was a lesson to me on a tarot life lesson on just that, we all have different levels of ability. I do believe that everyone has some intuitive skills, and I compare it to like singing. So everyone can sing at least a little bit. And for some, you could listen to them all day. And for some, it's like, oh God, please stop, So we can all do it, but some of us need guidebooks, and they may, I used some books for a lot of years once I started buying the books. I think the biggest enemy of intuition is being afraid to be wrong. And I went through a phase of that where I was leaning on the books and trying to remember what the cards meant, you know, and this sort of really rigid thing. And I learned after a while that what just came to me naturally was what the cards meant. And so, you know, when I would do readings, that I remember when I first started to really intuit, a woman sat in front of me. I was doing an event, and a woman sat in front of me, and she asked a health reading, and she pulled the Wheel of Fortune, and it was in reverse, and it looked to me in that moment like a big breast. And I said, "Oh, it looks like you've been afraid about breast cancer." And sure enough, she'd had a battle with it, and she'd overcome it, but she was afraid that it was going to come back. She was astounded, and that was just looking at the picture. When I was with another reader in my younger years, she was reading for animals, and she was using the Tarot de Maasai, which, if you know that deck, is much less descriptive in the pictures. It's just, you know, the Eight of Wands is just eight wands, and the Five of Wands is five wands, and you know, and there aren't
More
the, you
symbolic.
know, exactly. It's just the bare basics. But she taught me, you know, even looking at those, we were looking at a cat that had some health problems, and she put down, I think it was the maybe the Nine of Wands or the Nine of Swords, something like that. But I saw the stacked wands, and she said, "Oh yeah, vertebrae, and look at how this one is skewed, you know." And so she read them, and she saw them all as vertebrae, and it was what came to her. Since then, I've learned, you know, I look at the cups, and they have all this flow of water, and so a lot of times in a health reading, you know, it cups, you know, when they're in reverse, maybe a King of Cups in reverse, maybe he has diabetes, or, you know, there's a Ace of Cups with that hand that when it's in reverse, it looks like the hand is blocking the flow. We can see blockages. So there's a lot of information in there if you want to look for it.
Interesting. So, what makes someone a good tarot reader, apart from perhaps some inherent skills or predispositions? So, once someone has learned the craft of tarot, what makes someone a good tarot reader?
That's a really good question. I think it's a few things. I think you must be somewhat empathic because we are feeling into this other person's energy and we're really understanding them. And I can become quite moved reading for one of my clients. It's not unusual for me to get teary or choked up if I'm seeing what they're going through and I'm actually sharing it in that moment. So I think empathy is huge. I think, as I said, you don't want to be afraid of being wrong. That's where ego gets all involved. And when I was beginning readings in public, I remember a story I tell sometimes is a man sitting down in front of me, and my little inner voice right away said, "He's a cop." But I didn't speak it because I didn't want to be wrong, you know? And I put his cards down, and justice is his core card. And so I was kind of dancing around it, and I said, "Well, justice looks to be a core issue for you." And he says, "I'm a cop." And I was like, "Oh, why didn't I say it?" You know? And then within a couple more people later, there was a woman, and she was surrounded with children, and she had the Hierophant over her. And I'm thinking, she must be a teacher, but I didn't say it again. And then it came out that she was a teacher. And so as I got more comfortable, I learned, what have I got to lose? So what if I'm wrong? You know, I'll say what comes to me, and 90% of the time people acknowledge it. There are occasions when people just don't tell me, you know, some people like to keep it all a mystery and keep it to themselves, and I respect that. And then there are the, you know, there's maybe the 2% who say, "Nah, I didn't, you're wrong," or that it didn't connect. And if that's the case, that's been interesting because I've had people tell me I was wrong, And then a year later, they call me and they say, oh, it happened, but not that way, not the way I thought. Or somebody will pull me aside and say, I'm her sister, and she's in total denial. I've heard that a couple of times.
Okay.
So, you know, it just everything, every situation's different. Can I be wrong? Sure, I can be wrong. I'm a human being. But I'm just going to give you what I see. And more often than not, it seems to be pretty on the money.
Yeah. What about ethics?
Ethics, yeah. So people talk to me a lot about, is it okay to get into someone else's thoughts? You know, I know some readers who say, don't ask me about what your loved one's thinking about you, or don't ask me if somebody's cheating, or don't ask. And I look... And here's what I think. I think if your higher self is meant to know, then we're going to see it. And if it's none of our business, we're not going to see it. And so, Anna, if you ask me, you know, if you have a chaotic love life right now and we need to understand your partner, there's good reason that you should understand that. But if you ask me, tell me, what's going on in the private life of Brad Pitt, you know, a celebrity, you probably don't have an occasion to know that, you know, there's no reason that you should know that. And that would not be ethical to look into. And I probably couldn't see it because of that. You know, while we're all alive and so indirectly connected to Brad Pitt, there's, you know, he has his right to his privacy. but sometimes I see, sometimes people will block things, and yeah. I don't believe I can see anything that's not meant for them to, you know, if they've had maybe some terrible sexual abuse that they're not ready to handle right now, that's probably not going to be showing up for me, you know? It's not like I can see everything and people are revealed in a painful way. Because I ask spirit, source, God, whatever, to give you what you need, I am only going to see what you need. It's not going to get so nosy that I know all your stuff, you know?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I think that probably one of the main reasons for bad reputation that psychics and tarot readers have, and let's admit, is not very positive, put it this way, is probably twofold. One, there are people who claim to be readers and psychics, obviously to make money, but they are not. And two, there are readers, and I've had such experiences in my own readings, who do get good information and valid information, but where there are gaps, when they can't see certain aspects of my question, they will just make it up. I mean, you can tell. And I think that this is probably the main reason for such not very good reputation of this professional occupation, if you like. Would you agree?
Yeah, that makes sense. I would. I mean, there are always the hustlers who are, you know, I don't trust anybody who believes they can fix your love life or, you know, put a charm or a spell or a curse. All the warning signs go off there, and it's always for money, you know. And I've had people ask me to do this for them, and I say, why would you want to influence someone beyond their yeah. will to love you? Yeah. Like, you know, that wouldn't be true love, for instance. And, you know, and curses, you know, the general belief of a curse is if you put a curse on someone, it comes back to you three times over. So why would
that's
you want
right.
to do that?
So, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Not good energy. But people get hung up on those things. And so certainly I don't do anything like that. I've never professed to be a witch. I don't do spells. I am a practitioner and teacher of something called A Course in Miracles. And A Course in Miracles, what I love about that, magic is in the world, but miracles are a higher level. And so magic is manipulating the illusion. And we're all in the illusion, yes, and we're all experiencing the illusion, but we want to rise higher than that. We want to rise to miracles. And so I'm not in the spell business.
Yes. So if you can't see something in the reading, like there was a formation gap, if you
I'll tell
like.
people that I don't see that because it's not meant for them then. What I see, I believe, is meant for them. So we're not always meant to have all the details. If you read all the last pages of the storybook, it can ruin the story for you.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly.
And okay, and do you ever withhold information?
Sometimes people respond badly. It's less about withholding information and more like refusing to continue a reading or work with someone. If they're drunk, for instance, I say there's a reason they call it spirits. And a drunk will forget what I just said, and they'll be very repetitive, and they're shouting everything at me. And sometimes they look at a card like the death card, and they get hysterical, and it's And I have had to talk clients off the ledge, with like, it doesn't mean that. Calm down. And it gets to be a bit much, honestly. So I will refuse to read for drunk people. And I just don't think it's going to help anybody. It's just going to be bad energy. If people, as I said, if they're asking me to do spells or something, I'll decline and say, you've got the wrong girl, and go find someone else. I'm about reaching our highest potentials and self-actualizing. And so I have told really hard things. I remember being in a party, excuse me, and a man and his wife sat down. And it was really clear that he had been unfaithful and that she knew it. And the cards said it all. And I tried to say it in a very diplomatic way. And I said, well, it looks like there has been a third party interrupting the marriage, and that there's been some pain around this. But I saw that this man genuinely did want to save his marriage, and he loved his wife, and he didn't want to lose her. And he fool in reverse, he felt he'd been stupid and made some bad judgments, and they walked out holding hands. And I think that their tarot card reading was a moment to get closer. So, occasionally even the hard stuff needs to be said. Sometimes I don't know what I'm saying, because I don't know the background of the people. And so if I see, like, a very painful ending, well, I don't know if it's a death or a divorce or, but the people will fill in the gaps. And so I usually do say what I see, as long as I feel that I have a good, healthy, safe connection with the person, and that they want and need to hear it.
Beautiful. Thank you. And I absolutely agree with you that whatever the reader can see and whatever information they receive, they should pass it on to the client or the person that they are reading for. Because if this information wasn't meant for them, the reader wouldn't be able to see it to begin with. And so when I'm talking about ethics, one particular situation that I have in mind is precisely where a reader can see quite clearly the information relating to the question, but they make their own decision not to pass it on to the client. That's what I believe is unethical.
See, my feelings on that is, if you're meant to go through it, you will go through it, whether I tell you or not. You know, like if it's supposed to happen, it's going to happen because you're going, your higher self has signed the contracts to have the experiences you need to have. So nothing you can do or not do will derail you from that. So I can tell you, and maybe you'll go in wide-eyed and still experience it, or maybe you'll go in wide-eyed and change your course of action because it wasn't meant for you. You know, that's what I think. I would still tell you.
Okay, so now I'd like to give our listeners some practical information about tarot and how to read it. So could you give us a bit of an insider's knowledge, if you like, which cards should be looking at in a spread in particular, or a combination of cards, when asking some most common questions such as about health, love, money, legal matters, and say moving on, buying a house, for example.
So, health tends to be temperance is a great card for health. It's a card of balance and moderation. But as I said earlier, we can also look at things like flow in something like the Ace of Cups, and you know, with all these the watery cards, we can look at energy in the wands, and if they seem right side up or in reverse, if the energy seems blocked, you know. Swords, of course, can cause pain in reverse. And so, you know, things like that with health. Let's see, with houses, you know, you mentioned that the tens tend to be family and home, and house is included with that. So we see the Ten of Cups and this sort of happy home and landscape and family. The Ten of Pentacles is blessings around the house and wealth and that sort of thing. And then the Four of Wands is also a house card because it's having everything in order, and it's a couple. They're getting married under the Jewish chuppah, and because, as I said, there's a lot of Kabbalah, which is ancient Jewish mysticism, and so we have images like that. Let's see, what else did you say beyond health and housing?
Legal matters.
Legal matters. Okay, so of course the justice card, of course, is a big one for legal, whether it's right side up or upside down, being just or unjust. But we can also have like the Three of Pentacles, which is a card of contracts and, you know, signing and keeping agreements. It can be a card of vows, you know, in a wedding, and you know, or in reverse, letting go of vows, things like that.
Abundance.
Abundance. Well, of course, back to that Ten of Pentacles, which can be a wealthy home. The Empress card is a card of abundance. She is sitting on her throne and surrounded in grains of wheat and forests, and you know, she's Mother Earth, she's Gaia, and it's just a beautiful card for abundance. There are different kinds of things we can have in abundance, of course. So the Wheel of Fortune is one that we like to see with money, you know, an abundance of money. But there's, you know, abundance of love and passion, and which of course the Lover's card is part of that, as well as Two of Cups, which is I always say with love, which is everybody's favorite question. I like to see the combination of both the Lovers and the Two of Cups, because the Lovers by itself, people think that's what love is all about, but that's eroticism and passion. And that, of course, dies. And at the end of the day, we want the Two of Cups, which says, you and me, best friends for life, you know, that's the companionship.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. Well, Julia, thank you so much. Any final thoughts you would like to leave our audience with?
Sure. I think anybody can read the tarot cards. I think my book, Tarot Life Lessons, would be of a special interest to someone learning. Not because it's a guidebook, although there's a little bit of that, and there are even tarot tips at the end of every chapter, but more to see the practical use of it and how it actually works with clients, and to get some of those life lessons and understand that. So, yeah, I do believe that it is available for all, and whether you're wanting to go professional or if you just want to pull a card for the day and get a little bit of guidance in your day and how you should approach things, it's available for everyone.
Lovely. And you are available for readings online?
I am. I do readings. Yes, I do readings online through Zoom. I do phone and I do email readings. All different. I do events, but I am in the St. Louis, Missouri area in the United States. People do fly me to events in other places. I haven't been flown to another country yet. That would be fun, but
Maybe
but.
you could come to Australia.
If somebody wants to foot the bill, give me a call. We'll work it out. And I'm booking out a couple weeks in advance, but I would love to give a reading to your any of your listeners. I'm $3 a minute, so whatever that converts to your money system, and I have all the digital platforms that I accept payment.
Beautiful. Well, once again, thank you so much, Julia.
Thank
It's
you.
been such a pleasure to have you on Quantum Living.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That's all for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you really loved it, please post a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to encourage others to listen to it. For the show notes, guest and podcast info, reviews, comments, and much more, please visit quantumlivingpodcast.com. And if you'd like to dive deeper into quantum living and explore how you could work with me, please contact me, and I'd be delighted to help and support you on your quantum journey. I am your host, Anna Anderson. I look forward to connecting with you in the next episode of Quantum Living. Until then, keep your vibrations high and be well.